The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So, NBA finals or semifinals, conference finals going on right now here in Colorado. And my Spurs, the team of my college and law school years in Texas, just got the number one pick in the lottery. Pretty excited about that. Trying to decide if I want to get back into the NBA. I think I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it as like a Spurs fan. But then we got like this hockey thing this week where, you know, the Coyotes, will they, won't they? It's kind of
the
are they staying? Are they going kind of situation? And Patrick Mahomes is trying to bring a hockey team to Kansas City. So I have to ask you, you don't have a hockey team. You don't have an NBA team. Which would you rather have? Like, if you could just add one of those sports franchises to Kansas City to adopt as your own, which would it be?
I think I side with what I believe would be the majority of Kansas City poll answers on this question, that I would rather have an NBA team. And my reasons are thus. Number one, I personally am a Kansas basketball fan, as we know. And that means that I've watched in my life a lot of basketball, And I, not necessarily NBA basketball, but I'm certainly vastly familiar with the sport. And hockey is about as opposite. I've tuned in to like two Stanley Cup Game 7 third period. That's like all I've done ever, is like, I knew that the whole cup was on the line and it was tied and it was in the third period of the seventh game. And I was like, all right, fine. If I'm ever going to watch it, it's going to be now. But other than that, I really have no interest in hockey. I know that the in-game experience for the fan is a great time. Everyone who goes to an NHL game just raves about how fun it was. It's almost like when you hear people talk about going to a NASCAR race, even if they're not into NASCAR, they always talk about like, it's just a blast. It's just like the big roar of the engines and all that stuff. So I do think that the fan experience for an NHL team would be fun, but I don't know if Kansas City is a hockey team, a hockey town. I just don't, there's no ice rinks for kids to kind of learn how to play hockey or any of that stuff. There's just really no coverage of it. I'm picking basketball, and I think it's a pretty easy decision for me.
But I mean, Kansas City is a college basketball town. So wouldn't it almost make more sense, since everybody is so invested in their college basketball, their amateur basketball teams, as I like to say.
You do.
Because that's what they are. Although now they're not, because all the athletes are getting paid. So they're actually just bad professional basketball teams, which is almost even worse. But, you know, I mean, we could get a professional basketball team, but we could get something completely different in here. Now, I will say, while you were talking about your experience watching hockey, I was trying to add up the number of hockey games I've watched in my lifetime. I've seen the Miracle on Ice a number of times in its entirety. Watched on there. Al Michaels, the GOAT. I've seen Mighty Ducks. I actually worked for a hockey team in college for like almost a year. And I worked for the San Antonio Rampage. And I was a media relations intern. And I don't think I learned anything about hockey. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. And here with me, as always, my co-host, Taylor, at Taylor_Witt. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. I'm interested to see where Kansas City goes in that whole little debate. And other than that, just chilling.
Yeah, let us know on Twitter which one you would prefer.
No,
I think, don't let us know. No, let us know. This is how we get interactions.
Let him know.
No, this is how we drive interactions. I've been watching a lot of YouTubers lately. I've been watching this YouTube thesis.
Smash that like button.
And, you know, it's always smash that like button.
Ring the bell.
Let us know in the comments. You know, like, we need to generate useless interactions. Engagements, clicks are where it's at. You know what you guys actually can do is you can rate and subscribe to our podcast.
You can. We would love
on that. Any podcast app. We would love that. Don't tell us on Twitter whether you prefer an NHL team or an NBA team. We don't care. But
it doesn't help us.
You also can use our personal promo code SUNNY on Underdog Fantasy, which will help us. And that is a great thing for you to do. Best ball. It is a ton of fun. Check it out. We got
match
a great show for you guys.
Deposits up to $100. Got to mention that. Got to mention the money.
The money. We got a great show for you guys today. We've got two things on the agenda. We are talking about our Chiefs retrospective, which we're going to do first. We're going to talk about week two of the 2003 Chiefs season against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then we're going to be joined by Chiefs team reporter Matt McMullen, who's absolutely amazing. You guys are going to love that interview. But I guess let's just get into the week two of the 2003 Chiefs. I mean, do we have a title for this segment yet?
The blast from the past.
Blast from the past. That's
ass blast from the past.
Yes. Actually, you know, Jordan had a great, it's something, it was like blast from the past, but he had something
the
better.
Gets blasted on the past, I think, is maybe what he
we'll need to go consult the chat and pull this for next week. But for now, let's just set the stage for
the gang gets blasted in the past. I just looked
the gang
it up,
gets
so.
Blasted in the past. Sure.
All right. Jordan Bird of War King. We are calling this segment The Gang Gets Blasted in the Past.
The Gang Gets Blasted in the Past. So it's week two, 2003. We're going back 20 years.
Jesus.
And this game happened so long ago that we're watching the highlights. They were in color. They're not in high definition.
Yeah, but they're blurry as hell, yeah.
The footage is grainy. it's actually crazy to think about. And in attendance in this game were before Patrick Mahomes, before Andy Reid, Hank Stram and Lamar Hunt, and Len Dawson, who was also, I'm sure, in the stadium calling this game.
He was.
For the radio. I mean, those three pillars of the franchise were all in attendance for this game. Hank Stram was there, Lamar Hunt was there, and Len was there working. And it's crazy because obviously, you know, I mean, this was only 20 years ago. We were both fans of the team back then, but...
Yep. How much things have changed? Well, and, you know, the Chiefs obviously having come off of their blowout victory over the San Diego Chargers, even every little detail of 2003, you got to kind of slip up because, you know, so much has changed. But they blew out the San Diego Chargers week one, and then they, of course, welcome the Pittsburgh Steelers to Arrowhead Stadium in week two. And, you know, we still don't really know what this team is yet. We know they're a high-powered offense. We know the defense performed well against the Chargers in week one, but we're still kind of worried about some different... The reasons that the Chiefs were 8-8 in 2002 are still on all of our minds going into week two of 2003. So we're just going to kind of go through... We're obviously not going to give you every play in this game, but we're just going to talk about kind of the ebb and flow of this game, because let me tell you, there's a big ebb and then there's a massive flow. So... We'll start with
a little bit of wheat and then a little bit of chaff. A lot of chaff and then a lot of chaff. The chaff first and then the wheat.
Well, but which one do you want? Do you want to be the wheat or the chaff?
You want to be wheat. You don't want to be chaff.
I think you
want to
be chaff. I want to be chaff.
You definitely don't want to be chaff.
So why would you want to be wheat? So we'll start with the Chiefs' first drive, their second play of the game. Trent Green just throws one up trying to get Eddie Kennison, and instead he gets Chad Scott. Yeah, of course, you all remember Chad Scott. Yeah, Chaff Scott. Nice. And he houses it. 26 yards for a touchdown, and 40 seconds into the game, Pittsburgh jumps up, and they're up 7-0. And so that was kind of shocking. This was going to be – if the offense was going to struggle for the Chiefs, we knew that the defense wasn't going to, you know, be the reason that the Chiefs were going to win this game. So to start off with a pick six – really sucked. Just real quickly there, after Jason Baker punts one more time for the Chiefs, and then this, I thought this was a really funny sequence. The Steelers start off, they throw their first pass after a shitty Jason Baker punt where they started off on their own 43. They throw a 50-yard pass right away, down to the 7. Boom, one play in, they got the pick six, they got the punt by the Chiefs. Now they're down to the 7-yard line. And then I was discussing with you how different the NFL is for other reasons. The sure. Chiefs are called on a second and goal from the 6. They're called on a Mike Maslowski face mask. Now, in today's NFL, you're called on a face mask. Doesn't matter if you barely touched the mask or if you yanked it off the guy's head, it's going to be a 15-yard automatic first down every time. But of course, as some of us old heads remember, back in the day, they had an incidental face mask, 5 yards, no first down, almost like an offsides, and then they have the 15-yard personal foul. So this was the incidental type. So second and six, you get the incidental face mask. There's second and three. Then it's Jerome Bettis stuffed for a yard and Maddox incomplete to Plaxico Burress. And now the Steelers, after throwing the ball down to the seven on the first play, kick a field goal. They're up 10-0. So you
kick a field goal, by the way, from the Kansas City 2 yard line, from which is like,
is it 20, 20 yard
fourth and goal, fourth and goal from the two. A lot of teams will be going for that.
Great point. Didn't even think about that. That they, I mean, and they're a power running team. They're Jerome Bettis and the Steelers.
Jerome Bettis. Yes, exactly.
Like if you were ever going to line up a back and an offense to go get that 2 yards, that would have been it. But they, of course, Bill Cowher decides to go for 2003 NFL style and kicks the field goal, goes up 10-0. And the first of what is going to become the theme of the next couple weeks on this show, Dante Hall. Dante Hall says, I got this, guys. Don't worry about it. He takes the kickoff exactly a century, 100 yards for the longest kick return in Chiefs history at the time. And just like that, 1 second ago, the Chiefs were, the Steelers were knocking on the door about to go up 14-0. And instead, it is 10-7 Pittsburgh. What a start to this game. That's still in the first quarter.
It's crazy. This game had a ton of twists and turns in it, but obviously this one was pretty much just one cut and go. He had to beat the kicker. And we're going to talk about, and all of you, I'm sure, have seen, but we've got some younger fans that listen to this show. For those of you who are not familiar with the legend of Dante Hall, it will grow and grow and grow over the coming weeks. But this was just kind of, you know, one cut and go. He's the fastest guy on the field. He beat the kicker. What's crazy about this game is, so the Chiefs are down three. They get, you know, within 3 points. And the Steelers come down and score another touchdown here, and they're up 17-7. Plaxico Burress, by the way, scored this touchdown, which I had completely forgotten that Plaxico Burress was a Steeler. I remember him
just as a Giant, I guess.
No, I mean, I just remember him as a Giant. I mean, like, he played for the Steelers from 2000 to 2004. He was drafted by the Steelers, but 2005 to 2000, he actually played as the Steelers again in 2012, which I do not remember.
Yep. I do.
Probably because he had, seven targets.
Sure. So he signed with them and then never
really worked out. His memorable 42 yards for the 2012 Pittsburgh Steelers. He also played for the Jets, and obviously he was out of the league 2 years because he shot himself and got suspended. So
gun in the waistband.
The Steelers are up 17-7, and you know, it's crazy because this was not a great Steelers team. They ended up 6-10. The year before, they were 10-5-1, and the year after, they were 15-1, and they were, you know, a power.
Ben Roethlisberger the year after. I mean, you know, obviously got it figured out with the quarterback.
They invested in a quarterback, but I mean, this is a Bill Cowher Steelers team that had a lot of success that was traditionally, you know, it was one of those. I mean, just as the Steelers have been since Bill Cowher was replaced by Mike Tomlin, like, they're going to win, you know, 8-plus games every year.
More than they lose. Yep.
And, you know, the Chiefs' record historically against the Steelers has not been great. Certainly not in Pittsburgh, but this game was in Kansas City.
Yep.
And this game turned on its head immediately after the Steelers built this 10-point lead.
I will note two things. Number one is that the previous year, Dante Hall did have two punt returns and one kickoff return for a touchdown in 2002 and was the Pro Bowler, AFC Pro Bowl return guy. So when he housed this one, it wasn't like, who's Dante Hall? Like, everyone knew, like, that, you know, he is the premier return guy in the NFL right now. But this was his first return of the season, obviously. It was only week two, but really a good way for Dante to kick his year off. But then, you know, Trent Green, before Pittsburgh scored their second touchdown to go up 17-7, threw his second interception of the first quarter. And the Steelers immediately, one play later, was that Plaxico Burress 33-yard touchdown. So they're taking advantage of, you know, there's big play after big play after big play. And, you know, stop me if you've heard this before, but a game where the Chiefs are down big early when tons of big plays back and forth are going on between two teams reminds me a little bit of that Houston Texans playoff game that we were fortunate enough to attend. However, getting ahead of myself, now after the Steelers score, then the Chiefs do march down and just into the second quarter, they score a touchdown, they cut it to three, and then now the wheels just come off of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They go punt, Chiefs score a touchdown, they the Steelers throw a pick six to our guy Jerome Woods to go down. Now the Steelers are down 10 in the second quarter still. So they went from 17-7 to 27-17 down in a matter of minutes. I mean, again, stop me if you've heard that before. And then halftime is there and the Chiefs are already the Steelers do drive and kick field goal before half. So they managed to scrounge out a 7-point deficit going into a half where they had a pick six of their own. They picked off Trent Green twice. I mean, what can you do there? And then the second half just goes out of control. Chiefs score a touchdown, interception by Tommy Maddox. Chiefs score a touchdown, interception by Tommy Maddox. And next thing you know, the Chiefs have ripped off a 34-3 run after being down 10. And they run away with this game and they win it 41-20 after having been early on. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers scored 17 points in the first quarter and then three in the next three quarters.
Yeah, the Chiefs go on a 34-3 run.
Yeah, on Greg Robinson's shitty ass defense. I mean, they stepped up and they, you know, 20-3 second quarter by the Chiefs obviously put the game back on ice, but then they scored once in the third and once in the fourth. So I just want to
listen to the Strive summary in the second half. The Steelers punt, interception, punt, fumble, interception, turnover, rundowns. I mean,
yikes.
I mean, we're talking about the 85 Bears here,
right? I mean, exactly. Break up the Chiefs.
This defense is showing out.
Yep. So that game, you know, we're going to recap these games, but especially if they're a little bit more dramatic, we're going to kind of get into the nuances of them a little bit. But this was a 21 point ass kicking in week two after. Week one was a 27-14 win. So they have been, you know, the first 2 weeks of the year, the Dick Vermeil potion is working. Like, these guys are buying in. They know that they can score points. And now, really, you know, the pick six was seven of those 20 points that they allowed to the Steelers. So the defense, you know, they're doing their job.
Lest we forget, you know, as we mentioned when we previewed this season, the 2002 Chiefs were never two games above 500 the entire year
or below.
And they started off 2-0. This was the Chiefs' first 2-0 start since 1996.
Nice.
So, you know, I mean, this was rarefied air.
Big deal.
Starting off 2-0 in 2003. Listen, for you youngins, back in the day, starting off 2-0 was a big deal. All right. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen all the time. It didn't happen every single year. The Chiefs didn't win 100% of their games in September like they do now.
Right.
You know, it was weird. It was out of character.
100% of all of their games.
It was exciting. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It was definitely exciting. And it was also, you know, three of these touchdowns here. We'll get to our awards in a second. Three of these touchdowns here were by a potential award winner in Priest Holmes. And once again, like we talked about last week when we gave him the wild card, it was just kind of this like wait and see for him on if he was going to be the guy that, you know, led the NFL in rushing, if he was going to be this monster running back that the Chiefs expected, or was the injury from the end of 2002 going to kind of derail this undrafted free agent's career? And you could just tell, but in this game, he was as vintage Priest Holmes as he ever gets. And clearly a lot of that has to do with the line, you know, road grading for him and stuff. But I mean, he was nasty. And so let's get to the awards. Let's start with, of course, those of you familiar with the show, we have our five-star men. Men that say, I'm a five-star man by their play on the field. We have our wild cards.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
Who are capable of anything. We don't know if they're capable of being good, being bad, being some good and some bad in the same game. They can do anything. And then we have our trash man.
I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
Who eat garbage on the field with their play.
I love that you did that, and I appreciate that you're doing that, and you just plowed ahead. This is the second week in a row, though, that you have said them out of order. It's a five-star man, a trash man, and the wild card. The wild card is always last. So
damn,
you can take over the seg, and you did a great job with it. You did a great job.
I learned it by listening to you, but I guess I didn't learn enough.
You did put them in the wrong order. You start, and you do the five-star man. Then I will do the trash man, and then you can do the wild card.
See, the reason that I balanced it like that, just in my head, was that I have the five-star man who's like the best man. And then I have the wild card who's like middle ground. Like, you don't really know if the wild card's good or bad.
It's
and
like
then
a,
you have the trash man on the right that's like,
sure. It's like a compliment sandwich here, where you start off with the good, you put in the part that needs improvement in the middle, and then you come back with the wild card. It could go either way. Mm-hmm. You don't know if it's going to be a compliment sandwich or if it's going to be
a pizza, a compliment
sure,
pizza.
Right, exactly. Right.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I'm with
Give
you.
Give me your five-star man.
My five-star man for this game is Priest Holmes. I mean, he was phenomenal. He was everything that the Chiefs offense needed in a day where, we will talk about this as well, but the passing offense, despite scoring 41 points in this game, the passing offense only came up with 124 yards. So they needed some production on the ground. Priest Holmes produced 122 yards, so he almost out yardaged on the ground what Trent Green did in the air, and he scored three touchdowns, and he had a rush of 31 yards for his long, and was just as vintage Priest, as I said, that we've ever seen, certainly this year. So Priest Holmes, five-star man, he is the best. That is probably, if I'm a betting man, it's probably not his last five-star of the year.
No, definitely not. You know, it's crazy because the Chiefs only had 282 yards of total offense in this game and two turnovers, and they scored 41 points. Now, of course, it helped the Steelers turn the ball over four times. But, I mean, the Steelers outgained the Chiefs by 100 yards in this game. They had 380 yards. So,
yep.
Let's talk about the trash man. And that is my select for this week. And I am selecting Trent Green.
Yeah.
You know, Trent is obviously... he's somebody that will unpack throughout this whole saga of the 2003 Chiefs. But, you know, this was he was not really a full-time starter before he came to Kansas City. He started his second season in the NFL with Washington. He was 28 years old. You know, he got into the league late. He played almost a full season as Washington starter in 1998. He was 6-8. He had five starts with St. Louis, obviously with Dick Vermeil in 2000.
Right.
And then he comes to Kansas City, and he was 2-3. So, I mean, 6-8, 2-3. In 2001, he was 6-10. In 2002, he's 8-8. So there was no reason to think that Trent Green was really anything other than kind of a bum. I mean, not
average.
Not a,
certainly
not
no
a bum,
better
but,
than average.
Sure, right. But, like, you know, a guy who, with the right supporting cast, and we obviously saw it in 2002, could quarterback an elite offense, but he was not necessarily the guy that was going to be an elevator necessarily. And so this game, you know, I mean, it's not great. It's not a great performance. He deserves a trash man here. I mean, if you just look at the statistics here, you said it. I mean, the Chiefs almost outgained his passing yardage total on the ground.
Well, they did as a team. Sure. Priest had 122 on the ground,
Priest,
but then Dante Hall had another
right.
19, and T. Rich
had
another 20.
Did it by himself, right?
Yeah.
So Trent Green, 124 yards, one touchdown, and two picks, 62 quarterback rating. He took a sack. Not good. He's the trash man for this game.
I will say, if Trent wanted to be in good company of Chiefs quarterbacks that have played Pittsburgh in week two and only had six incompletions or fewer, because he was 15 of 21.
Sure.
You know, there's another guy, another Chiefs legend that also only incompleted five times against Pittsburgh in week two, but those box scores were a little different. So
yeah, he also had six touchdowns. So
he
did.
Well, you know, potato, potato. Now we'll go to the wild card. And I thought about, you know, there's a couple ways you can treat the wild card, obviously.
Yes.
And for this game, I want to talk about a guy that literally at any moment could be a non-factor in a game, or he could be the only reason that the Chiefs win a football game. And
he's
there's
the ultimate wild card.
He's the ultimate wild card. And there's not too many positions even in the game other than quarterback, I suppose, where you either have – and really, quarterback, you don't have no impact. You're either a negative or a positive. But a return guy, you can either have no impact at all, nobody even notices you were in the game, or – you just completely blow the shit wide open. And that's exactly what Dante Hall did. He was amazing in this game. As I pointed out earlier, he did have three kick return/punt returns in 2002. So it's not like he was a unknown factor, but after not having scored a kick return in week one, which you'll come to realize is a very rare thing for Dante Hall in this era. He comes back and he houses that 100-yard kick return after the Chiefs came up with the field goal stop, the big field goal stop. But also later on in the game, he has a 45-yard punt return that brings the Chiefs down to the 7-yard line, and they punch it in from there and score another touchdown. So, I mean, he was doing his absolute X-factor human joystick thing. The reason why that's a wild card is because obviously you cannot bank on that type of performance like you could with a quarterback or a running back or a wide receiver. You just never know when it's going to come, but when it does, it is glorious. Dante Hall, you are such a wild card.
Can't wait to see what shenanigans we get into in week three of the 2003 season. We're going to keep it rolling next week. It's going to be amazing.
So joining us on the show now, we are thrilled to welcome the face and voice of the Chiefs. And that is, of course, Chiefs senior team reporter Matt McMullen joins us on the pod now. Matt, how the heck are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you guys. Hearing face and voice of the team, I'm always like, that's not me. You know,
it is.
I'm still like, I don't know. I'm just a Chiefs fan that gets to go to work every day at One Arrowhead Drive, but very happy to be with you guys.
You are as associated with the team as anybody out there, so we are obviously thrilled to have you. Clearly, you know, it's the off season. Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Let's just get right down to it. Let's talk about the Super Bowl, because Super Bowl 57 was incredible. We want to hear all about kind of your experience that whole week and weekend. If I'm not mistaken, BJ was on the sidelines for 54 and 55. So 57 was your first time. It's crazy that we're talking about the number of Super Bowls that we've all obviously talked about.
Right.
Talk about 57 and what it was like for you, and kind of how your travel went and all that.
Yeah. Well, it was just amazing, man. And you're so right. Like, to get into this kind of line of work, just working in sports, you hope that maybe you can be on a team that goes to the playoffs and maybe has a chance to compete for championships. But for me, growing up a Chiefs fan, I've been a Chiefs fan my whole life, to work for this team and to go to multiple Super Bowls and to win two of them is frankly unbelievable. And it's just been an incredible ride. And we're living in really great territory here when we can compare the Super Bowl experiences. But this one for me was, I think, a bit more special. And the reason behind that is Super Bowl 54. I still went. I was on the weekend crew, but my role wasn't as large back then. I kind of did like secondary stuff, but I still went, got to bring my family. I was there. I was on the field afterwards. It was incredible. But I think just for some reason, I was so caught up in how fast everything was moving and how I couldn't believe that we were there. And I was so focused on my job that, believe it or not, I don't know if I really enjoyed it in the moment. I think after the fact, when I would rewatch the game or look back on photos, I'd be like, wow, that's so cool we did that. But I didn't really enjoy it in the moment like I really should have. So going to Super Bowl 57, I got to go out a whole week early. I was in Phoenix beginning on the Sunday before the Super Bowl. The whole week I was like, no matter what, I'm going to make sure I enjoy this. Because also Super Bowl 55, the COVID year, I didn't even go to that. So That like almost doesn't count. So 57,
well, it doesn't count.
We don't talk about it. Nor do I. But 57, I was like, I'm going to enjoy this thing and really try to soak it all in. And I did. I mean, the whole week was just amazing. It was busy, but I had a chance to really enjoy it and to experience it. And then to win the game, especially the way that we did, like, you know, Patrick's limping in the first half. Ugh. And it's just like, you know, please find a way to make this happen and to win in epic fashion in the second half, like we did, to be on the field after it. I really soaked it in. And like I said, we're pretty lucky that we get to talk about multiple Super Bowls, but just for some reason, this one was more special for me.
Austin, his answer reminds me a lot of Andy on New Heights.
It does.
Andy and Travis talking about the comparison of the Super Bowls, and they said the exact same thing, basically, that 54 was a blur, and it was kind of all the, you know, you were in, you were out, like it moved so fast. And they both said how 57, they really got to soak it in. And I just think that's funny that everyone that was in the eye of that storm felt the same way, that it was just like this, you know, the first one was crazy and it was awesome to win, but the second win was really where all three of you have talked about how that was like, you know, a different feeling. How were you feeling at halftime?
Nervous.
Yeah.
You know, I have ultimate faith in our team, and for good reason. I mean, they're never out of it. I knew that we weren't out of it, but to be that close, you know, I'm just thinking about how incredible the season was, and to be that close, you just want to finish it. And it's right there. And you know that they can do it. And I was just hoping that Patrick was all right and that we could get off to a good start in the second half. I felt really good about the fact that we were receiving the opening kickoff. And if we could go down, score, set the tone, we would be all right. But I'd be lying if I wasn't a little bit nervous at halftime, right? Because I'm just like any fan. I'm helpless just watching it. And just I want to have that experience with the team, with my family. I want to go on the field afterwards and to feel another Super Bowl victory. And I wanted it really badly. So the fact that they're able to figure it out didn't surprise me, but it was quite a relief. And I'll give you another story about just being on the field after the Super Bowl and kind of comparing them because it kind of works. Super Bowl 54, I almost didn't even go on the field after the game because I was so concerned about making sure I made the bus back to the hotel. I look back on that. I'm like, I'm an idiot. Like, who cares?
Can't believe it.
Yeah, get an Uber or something. Like, who cares? But like, I was so concerned. And luckily, one of my coworkers who worked for in our social media department was like, we're going to go on the field. And I was like, all right, you're right. This one, I went down on the field right after the game was over because for some reason my credential allowed that. And I went straight on the field.
Love
and
it.
I just wandered around, just like confetti flying on me, just wandered around for like 30 minutes. And this guy comes up to me. He's like, you just soaking it in? And I was like, yeah. And he's, oh, yeah, I'm Harrison Butker's dad. I'm like, what? And I had to shake his hand. And I was like, awesome. I appreciate awesome. Your son for getting us to this game with that kick in the AFC yeah, title game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've been calling that the biggest kick in Chiefs history. And we have gone back through the record books. And I mean, if you look at the Chiefs playoff history, even, you know, before this season, not too many bigger kicks than sending your team to the Super Bowl. Taylor and I were fortunate enough to be in attendance for that. That was our first AFC championship game. So that was amazing. I was going to ask, I mean, we kind of mentioned obviously the vibe with Andy Reid and Travis Kelce having a connection to Philly. Could you sense, I mean, was there a different energy in the week leading up to the Super Bowl because of the Kelce connection and the Andy Reid connection then for, you know, Super Bowl 54 or, you know, that other
one. Super Bowl that must not be named yet.
You know, honestly, from my perspective, I would say no. And I think that's the brilliance of Coach Reid and the brilliance of our guys is that they don't get caught up in stuff. I think they're happy to talk about it and they acknowledge that there's a story there and that it's interesting, but what I think is so great about our guys is they really approach every single game without any distractions around them. And I think that's part of why they've been so successful. It is a crazy story in retrospect to think Coach Reid in his 10th season with the Chiefs beating the Eagles in the Super Bowl. I mean, you can't write that, but I really truly believe that he did not get caught up in it at all until maybe after the game was over. I really believe that. And same with Travis with his brother. Like, I think he thought it was cool that they were playing against one another, but I don't think he got too caught up in it either. And they'll look back on it and it's wild, but I think that's why this team wins because a lot of other teams get caught up in that stuff. And it's so easy to, because it's human nature, but I truthfully really don't think that Coach Reid or Travis or any of our guys got, or thinking about it. They were just thinking about the game.
They're winners, man. They stay focused. It's so impressive. We're big legacy guys on this show. We like to talk about where players sit on all time NFL history and stuff like that. And the big three on the Chiefs, of course, Patrick, Andy, and Travis, all three of them have had just remarkable one of one careers so far. The Super Bowl wins, you know, the first one, you get it off the back for Andy. That was a huge, huge, huge one for Andy. But I mean, also getting Patrick, his first one as a starting quarterback, big for his legacy, shows he can win the big game and all that stuff. Just kind of what's your perspective on working so closely with three guys that are obviously as legendary in this sport as they come? What do you think the impact of multiple Super Bowl wins now for those three guys? What do you think that does for their career, perspective of their career?
Well, perspective is the perfect word because that's what it is. It's just insane perspective because one of my favorite things, because I got my start in baseball. I liked being like a baseball public relations guy. So writing like game notes and stuff, and baseball is so stat oriented. That's why I try to bring that kind of stuff to my football coverage, because I think it's interesting to put things into context. And besides the Chiefs being my favorite team, I could not work for a better team to do the kind of stuff that I enjoy because it's really history happening before our eyes. There's not a ton going on right now. So I can kind of just dive into like stats and numbers from the season and past seasons and kind of just try to appreciate it. And a few days ago, I was looking at Mahomes stuff He has the most passing yards, the most passing touchdowns, the most completions through 80 career regular season games in NFL history. That's amazing, right? But a lot of guys have a lot of great stats. In addition to that, he also wins more than anyone. He has 19 career losses, including the playoffs, in 5 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Five games. It's just, it's absolutely nuts. He is at his best in the biggest moments. He's won multiple MVPs, multiple Super Bowls. He's not even 28. It's crazy stuff. And before last year at training camp, I was talking to one of my friends who isn't a Chiefs fan. And just looking from afar, he's like, what are your real expectations for this season? And I was like, I think we're going to host the AFC Championship game and have a great shot at getting back to the Super Bowl. And he's like, eventually, you can't keep doing that. Like, you have to be realistic. We've never seen that before. And my response was, maybe we've never seen a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes before. And the numbers back that up, because we have players with great stats, like Dan Marino, for example. Amazing stats, especially for his era. Or Peyton Manning.
Yep.
But the winning in big moments wasn't necessarily always there. And for Marino, he never won a Super Bowl, never got back. And like you said, I think that's why it's so important that Patrick won Super Bowl 54, just to avoid the media narrative. I have confidence that he would have won a Super Bowl even if the Chiefs had lost that game.
Sure.
But just to avoid the media narrative of, well, he hasn't won one yet. No, he won his first one ever, went to another one, came up short, but used that as fuel to get back yet again. And now he has two Super Bowls already in five seasons as a starter. It's just insane.
We talk, Matt, too, about this season being such a tipping point, because you had obviously the AFC Championship game loss last year when the Chiefs were up big at halftime. The year before that, the loss to Tampa in the Super Bowl. And, you know, this year, getting to his third Super Bowl, I mean, you're 1-1 in the Super Bowl. And you had a victory in the first one, a blowout loss in the second one, which... I don't know why we keep circling back to this. I don't want to dwell on that.
Yeah, you gotta move on, buddy.
but getting ahead of the sticks there. I mean, getting to 2-1 in the Super Bowl, getting to above 500, 3-2 in the AFC Championship game, and getting to your third Super Bowl. It just feels great as we're all sitting here discussing the stats to be ahead of the sticks. And you know, the other thing that we like to talk about on this podcast is just, you know, I mean, Patrick winning a Super Bowl in his second season as a starter. You know, Joe Burrow is going into his fourth season. Josh Allen is already in his fifth or sixth season. You know, those guys, Joe Burrow made it to one Super Bowl and he lost. Josh Allen hasn't made it to a Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson hasn't made it to an AFC Championship game. Justin Herbert doesn't have a playoff win. You know, like, it just is amazing in this era where you've got all these talented quarterbacks in the AFC, how much better our quarterback is.
Yeah, we're just very fortunate that we have
we are
that guy, because, man, there's so many good quarterbacks in the AFC, and it has to be tough being like a Bills fan. You have this great player at quarterback, and a lot of other teams have really great quarterbacks as well, and you can't just go out there and dominate. I think what you said about the tipping point is a really great point, just because football, you're only playing once a week. The playoffs, you're only playing a handful of games. You only have so many chances to go win the whole thing. It's so hard. It is so hard. And just if a few things go wrong, a whole season's worth of work goes out the window. I still think the 2020 Chiefs are one of the best teams in franchise history.
Yep.
We kind of don't talk about it because they lost the Super Bowl. If you take the other Super Bowls out, like if 54 didn't happen, 57 didn't happen, if none of that happened, just the 2020 team, we'd be talking about that team like it was one of the greatest teams in franchise history, but we don't really talk about it because it didn't end the way we wanted it to. One game changed everything. And I think as important as it was for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl this past year, I think for just kind of maintaining their dominance in the AFC, beating the Bengals in the AFC title game was enormous. And that's just one game, you know, and it comes down to 30 seconds at the end where it's tied. Who's going to win this game? If the Bengals win that game, the whole offseason narrative would have been just insufferable. So I'm so glad that she's found a way to come out with the win in that one. And really up until that point, putting Super Bowls aside, I wanted that game so badly. And just in the context of other playoff games, that's the game I wanted. And again, for the Chiefs to win that game in epic fashion, the way they did, down a whole bunch of players, relying on rookies, and to beat the Bengals, who we all acknowledge are a really good team and a team on the rise. was pretty awesome. So I'm glad the tipping point went in our favor, because it's a lot more fun to talk about how the Chiefs have won two Super Bowls in 5 years than talking about how we're going to beat the Bengals, you know?
Right.
I like this narrative better.
Yeah, Austin and I, as he mentioned earlier, we attended that game together, and in the car, in the parking lot, before we even got into the stadium, he caught me just kind of staring off into nothing. And he was like, "You all right, buddy?" And I was like, "I mean, I can't believe how badly I want this game. Like, and in the middle of the Chiefs' run, where so many important games have happened and so many big moments and all that stuff, I just kind of, it dawned on me that this moment against the Bengals was a branch between two universes that were so different from each other that I couldn't live with the other one. It just would have been awful. I want to circle back real quick to the stats and the winning for Patrick. You mentioned the guys that had the stats but not the wins. You also have guys that have the wins, whether it's Bradshaw or Aikman or Brady, that didn't necessarily produce those kind of jaw-dropping individual moments, the MVPs, the crazy plays. Like, Brady obviously has his personal accolades, but he was also around for so long, they're almost by default given to him. But Patrick does the best of both. He does the team stuff, he does the individual stuff. Just thinking about the four quarterbacks that have the two MVPs and two Super Bowl MVPs, Brady, Montana, Manning, Mahomes, is there anyone else in the top, I mean, that has an argument above Mahomes in the top four of quarterbacks of all time? Or is that the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks? Is it those four guys and everyone else is knocking on the door?
It's funny, because I think as Chiefs fans, we've been ready to accept this for quite a while and to acknowledge that he is already one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But just being rational, and because people would say that we're jumping the gun,
yep,
you had to wait a little bit, you know. So even after he threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns and basically his rookie season in 2018, we're like, all right, we'll wait. With the Super Bowl in 2019, okay. Leads his team to five straight conference title games at home in his first 5 years as a starter. That's never happened before.
Silly.
No team has ever hosted five straight conference title games in the AFC or the NFC. The Chiefs are the first ever, and it's in his only span as a starter. So that's
Never not hosted it. Yeah.
He's never not hosted it.
It's crazy.
He's played, I think, 14 playoff games, never on the road.
Yep.
So, I mean, and then, of course, winning another Super Bowl and becoming the first quarterback since Kurt Warner, I believe, in 99 to win and Super Bowl MVP in the same season. So, I mean, how can we not talk about him as one of the greatest of all time already? Because no one's done these things before, and he's not even 28 years old. So I'm with you. I mean, I'm ready to say, I understand Brady has the rings, and that is a totally valid argument. Certainly. But I'm ready to say that Mahomes is on his way to being the greatest of all time, because he combines the winning with the stats and just with like the wow. You know, like, you watch him and you just go, wow, I've never seen that before. And he's the kind of guy that can make someone who's not a football fan a football fan. And I kind of joke around that, like, in 20 years, us as Chiefs fans, we're going to watch football and be like, it's not quite the same.
No, it's not the same when we're watching two other teams that aren't the Chiefs. Right. I mean, if there's a Monday Night Football game and it's some big matchup, I just find myself bored. I'm just like, why can't you guys run the offense the way that the Chiefs do it? I mean, it's just, they've kind of ruined football, but in the best way you could possibly ruin football.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, how lucky are we as Chiefs fans? Because this guy could be on any team and we'd all watch his games, and he's our guy in Kansas City. And also, like, he doesn't let major letdowns get to him. Like, we've talked about the AFC title game in 2021. That was a bummer. I mean, that was hard. And for a lot of players, I think that would really weigh on them, and they would blame themselves, and it would be hard for them to crawl out of that. And not only does he have an MVP season the next year, he beats that same team in that same game and then goes and wins the Super Bowl. I have kind of a funny story about that, actually. And when you were talking about how badly you wanted the game, it reminded me of it. The 2021 AFC title game, Mitch and I were doing our Chiefs Rewind show from the field. And in order to do that, I would interview some players off the field. And Mitch couldn't do it, obviously, because he was in the radio booth doing post game. So I would have to be down on the field for the final like 5 minutes of every playoff game. Sounds really cool. Is actually quite stressful for a person like me that likes having their laptop in front of them, or at least having a vantage point where you can see what's going on. I get to tell people I was on the field for the 13 seconds moments. Really cool in retrospect, not so cool in the moment. Cause I'm like, what's going on? Like, where's the ball?
Yep.
But for the Bengals game, we're going to wear conference champion hats if we won the game on Chiefs Rewind. And I didn't open it because that's bad luck, but I have this box that I know contains conference champion. I have the box and I'm on the sideline holding this box. We're so close to winning and we lose, and I have to go return the box to the pro shop and it gets sent off to wherever it goes.
Africa, I think. Yeah.
Somewhere. You better believe I was thinking about that moment when I was on the field after the AFC title game this past year. Just like, man, like how often does a team get a redo, essentially, just a year later? Let's just do this all over again and flip the script. And we're living in like an alternate universe now if we had won. It was euphoric. And it gets back to Mahomes. It gets back to how his attitude permeates throughout the entire team. And that's why he's great. He's a great player. He's a great athlete, but he just refuses to quit and refuses to lose. And I'm glad that we have that guy on our side.
No joke. You talked about starting in baseball, and Austin and I, huge Royals fans before the big Chiefs, before the turn, basically, between the two franchises. And we talked a lot about how lucky the 15 Royals were that the 14 Royals lost in horrible, heartbreaking fashion in Game 7 of the World Series. And then the very next year, they got the shot. And if they didn't get the shot that next year, we could be talking about what could have been for the rest of our lives on that run. But we don't even think about the 14, you know, lost too much because of 15. So I definitely I sympathize with that for sure.
Speaking of championship rings, Matt, do you know what the ring is going to look like yet?
I don't. They keep that stuff all secret, but I'll tell you what, I cannot wait. just as, you know, someone, again, that grew up a Chiefs fan that, you know, was never super athletic, but is in love with sports and wanted to be a sports writer and ended up doing this. The fact that I'm going to have multiple Super Bowl rings does not make any sense. And
unbelievable.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's nuts, you know, to have my name on it. I mean, my Super Bowl 54 ring is like my prize possession, and even the AFC title ring in 2020 is significantly smaller, and it's like, that's a bummer, we could have won the Super Bowl, but it's still cool.
Yeah.
And now to have a third ring, it's basically like 2.5 now if you include the championship ring in 2020. Sure. I mean, it's just crazy. I appreciate Mahomes, I appreciate Kelsey, I appreciate Coach Reed for helping me just live the ultimate dream,
giving you a amazing Super Bowl ring.
Full of rings here, you know.
Unbelievable. So as fun as the Super Bowl was, we have other pressing issues to talk to you about, including the NFL draft that took place in Kansas City. I guess first impressions by you of how Kansas City fared under the glaring spotlight of the NFL circus. I mean, did you feel like everything went about as according to plan, about as well as could expected?
Yeah, I really do. I think it was absolutely incredible. Did you guys have a chance to go out there?
Didn't know. Although I live in Kansas City, a little leery of that gigantic crowd. That's still not quite my thing. So I stayed home, and Austin is in Colorado. But
I will say, though, Matt, that one of the reasons that I made the decision not to travel down there is because I went to the 2015 Royals parade and the whole ceremony at Union Station, the exact same venue. And, you know, that was 8 years ago, and, you know, a little bit more spontaneous. Obviously, there was more lead up time to the draft. But I mean, it was great to be in the crowd for a championship parade. I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't see anything. There was nothing to eat. There was nowhere to go to the bathroom. Like, it was just, you know,
chaos.
And that colored my opinion of that venue. I was like, I'm going to watch this on TV in high def, and, you know, I can access all the picks and I can read everything and I can eat whatever I want. But I was just absolutely blown away by not only how the city showed out, but the venue looked incredible. And I mean, kudos to everybody involved there, including everybody with the team, obviously, all the coverage that you guys brought, because it was unbelievable.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was amazing. I was also at the Royals parade way back in 15, and this did feel like the city has kind of gotten used to these kinds of events, which is so funny. I was in, I don't know where I was. I was talking to somebody about this and about the draft in Kansas City hosting it. And they're like, well, you know, we have experience with the Royals parade, two Chiefs parades. I'm like, what time warp are we living in?
Yes.
Like, definitely. You know, senior in college, Matt, these things, I'd be like, what? Like, we have all this experience hosting major events and parades, but the reality is Kansas City does. And It was just awesome. Now, I had a chance to go to the site on Tuesday of draft week. So they were still kind of setting everything up, and I was blown away by it. Just the footprint and everything that it entailed was incredible. Now, keep in mind that was without people there. It was just workers, but still really cool to kind of experience. I got to do like a behind the scenes tour because we made a video that kind of explained to fans like what
to expect.
And it was so cool. Like just to be on the stage and to see it all was amazing. On Thursday and Friday, ironically enough, Mitch and I were just at the Chiefs facility doing all of our normal stuff if the draft was anywhere else. So I didn't actually get to go on Thursday or Friday, but I was there Saturday morning because we held like a kind of a Chiefs event there where like Dante Hall was there as the new Chiefs Hall of Famer and stuff. Mm-hmm. Elix was there and for like a smaller group of fans, but still a Chiefs event. And I got to see it and it was just awesome. And it kind of reminded me of like a Saturday morning college football environment. Like if you're walking to the stadium at like 11 a.m.
Yep.
People are tailgating. Everyone's excited. It was a kind of a crisp day. It was like in the 60s. It was just perfect. And between that, my experience and just seeing everything on TV just looked amazing. I'm so proud of Kansas City for the way they pulled it off. And I truly believe, I don't know this, but just based on how it went, I truly believe it's going to happen here again. We keep talking about it like it's a once in a lifetime event. I think it was the best draft ever. So I think there's a great chance Kansas City gets a shot at this again too.
I sure hope so. And obviously the NFL is in love with giving Kansas City its love, and you know, I think it's a great relationship right now that Kansas City has with the NFL. As a fan of the team, when the draft comes around, do you find yourself like looking up prospects and trying to say like, oh, who would this guy fall to the Chiefs at this spot? Or do you kind of sit back and just say, I wonder who they're going to pick and not really have like, do you have draft crushes? Some people have draft crushes. Some people do a bunch of mocks. Some people just kind of stay away from it and wait till the picks come in and then start to dive into it. How do you handle the draft?
So I'm definitely like a nerd who enjoys digging into the prospects and learning about them. I do not pretend to be a draft analyst.
Sure.
Like, I am not like crunching hours of tape. I'm not like, wow, I love this guy's body mass. Like, I don't I understand that stuff. What I do is I try to digest as much information from experts that I can. So one of my favorites is Dane Brugler from The Athletic.
We love him.
Yeah. Like I read his draft guide like it's the Bible, right? So I just try to digest all of that information. And the way I see my role leading up to the draft is I try to present Chiefs fans with, hey, here's a whole bunch of players that could make sense. Here's what experts think of them. And then when we draft some guys like Felix, for example, here's what Dane Brugler had to say about him. Here's what Pro Football Focus had to say about him. So I just try to digest all that information and then share it with people when we're looking at certain prospects. So I really enjoy the draft. I enjoy watching highlights of players and learning about players, but I also don't like pretend like I'm watching film for years and years and years. Because truthfully, I don't watch a ton of college football. I watch the major games, but I don't have time because half the time we're traveling and I'm getting ready for the Chiefs games. So my draft prep doesn't really begin until immediately after the Super Bowl. Like I went to the combine a week and a half after the Super Bowl, which was nuts.
Yeah.
I was just crazy trying to download as much as I possibly could mentally about who are all these players. And I felt really good about it by the time the draft rolled around. I felt good about the guys that were kind of there, and like a top 100 is kind of what I try to have a good concept of.
Right. The big names and that type of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Just so like when the Chiefs draft somebody, I can be like, all right, I know exactly who this guy is. And, you know, I had done a ton of research on Felix. I'd done a ton of research on Rashee Rice and Wanye. So I felt good about all those guys. And you get to the later parts of the draft, maybe you've heard of a guy, maybe you haven't, but
yeah,
I enjoy the draft prep process. I think it's fun and there's not a whole lot else going on. So it's just something to do.
So speaking of the draft, Matt, just really quick before we get into the Chiefs' actual pick, I want to address a rumor that was going around, and feel free to dodge this question if you want. But the draft was in Kansas City. The Chiefs were picking at the end of the first round, pick 31. So obviously there were some rumors going around that the Chiefs were not trading that pick no matter what. They were taking a player. Obviously, Brett Veach came out and said we had some offers to move down, but we didn't think that we'd be able to get the player that we wanted. So we just went ahead and took him. We'll talk about Felix in a minute. But confirm or deny, Chiefs were always peeking, taking that pick, making that pick.
I firmly believe that the entire brain trust of the Chiefs is going to do what's in the best interest of the Chiefs and winning.
Sure.
So I think if there was a great trade offer on the table, they would have taken it. But I believe what Brett said, and that's that the compensation didn't line up with their comfort level of giving that pick away. And let's just go ahead and take a really good player. I think if they had an opportunity to move back and acquire some more picks that were kind of more in the top 50 range, like maybe if, I think the rumor out there, right, was that they would have moved back into the 40s.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a little bit too far for Brett. Maybe if it was at pick 35, he'd feel more comfortable. I really do believe that if it made some sense for the Chiefs and the Chiefs were better for it, then it would have been okay. But it kind of worked out perfectly where the Chiefs got a really good player at 31. He's from Kansas City, and I think he's going to be a really good player for us.
Let's talk about that really good player. So Felix Anudike Uzomah, obviously, if you're a K-State fan listening at home, you obviously know him. But now if you're a Chiefs fan, you've gotten to know him by now. What a cool story. Kansas City, K-State, the Chiefs, Chiefs fan. How fired up were you when that name was announced? Was that someone that, you know, really that you saw as a big home run, or how'd you feel about that?
I felt great about it because we do a live show for the first round where Mitch and I react to the pick live, which is kind of a scary prospect because
yes,
I like to think I have a good idea of all the players that are on there, but I really don't want to mindlessly talk about someone I know nothing about on a live web show.
Right.
You know, so right. I just am so paranoid that I'm going to not know the player. So I just do hours and hours of research and preparation, making sure I'm ready for any scenario. And I made all these like packets, like one sheeters with PFF stuff, Dave Brugler stuff, all the stuff for all these possible players we could take. Felix was the first one I made. I made 39 of these packets.
Wasted your time.
Wasted my time. Legitimately, all Thursday and Wednesday were just total wastes. Sure. Felix is on Tuesday. I think it's a home run of a pick. I think it makes a lot of sense. He is a guy that he's not huge, but he has good size to him. He's not like the super undersized edge rushers that were in this draft, like Nolan Smith. I think Nolan Smith's a good player, but just for what Steve Spagnuolo asked his defensive ends to do, I think Felix fits more of that physical mold. So he can bounce inside if needed. He can take on tackles every down if needed, but he also has great speed. He's not a guy that's just a bull rusher. So I think he can do a lot. He had great production at K-State. I think he had like 19 and a half sacks or something in his last 2 years. A ton of tackles for loss. So just a very productive player. Won Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year last year. He has the accolades. And he's only going to get better. He's like 21 years old. So I just am really into it. And I think it adds an area where the Chiefs didn't necessarily have a hole, but to have two young edge rushers on the bookends of the Chiefs defensive line right now, it's just very exciting if you're a Chiefs fan because Felix and George Karlaftis will grow together, I think.
Yeah, he's super exciting. I really like that he was a finisher. He converted something like 25% of his pressures actually into sacks. So it's one thing just to get around the edge and get it, you know, to the quarterback, but you got to bring him down. So that's something that, you know, is obviously an exciting skill set. When I talk about the other rookies that were drafted, we don't have to go into all of them, but if I say the names, Rashee Rice, Wanya Morris, Shamari Connor, BJ Thompson, Keandre Coburn, Nick Jones, and even undrafted Denarik Prince, what's something that you think of immediately from that group that you're excited to see?
Athleticism. That's what I think is they are all super athletic.
Yep.
They're also versatile. So when I think about Rashee, and I won't drown on forever about all these guys, but speaking of Rashee specifically, one thing Brett talked about a lot is that he's like a running back in the open field. So I see a player that isn't necessarily just a guy who's going to run a go route. He's somebody who can also do the underneath stuff, be a blocker underneath, tunnel screens, stuff like that. I'm not saying he's going to fill the Juju role because Juju is an established veteran in this league. It's hard to do. Maybe Rashee can be that one day, but he can do a lot of the things that Juju did very well, which I'm excited about. The rest of the guys, I don't think it's a knock to say that I think initially special teams is where they're going to really make their impact. Talking about guys like Nick Jones, BJ Thompson, Shamari Connor. I think that's a compliment because they're also versatile and athletic that I think right away they can elevate the Chiefs special teams unit to a point where they can impress enough to eventually help out on defense as well. But I just really like the depth that the Chiefs have in a lot of spots now. And camp's going to be fun because as the Super Bowl champions, of course the Chiefs can get better. There's always going to be areas where you want to address and get better, but the Chiefs roster is really good. and we're not counting on these guys to come in right away and fill massive roles. They just are expected to come in and compete and help this team win. And I think in one way or another, all these guys is going to help us win in their own way.
Yeah, I think the benefit of hitting a homer with last year's draft and having all those rookies that contributed to the Super Bowl team and all that is that going into this draft, they weren't desperate for these picks to hit. They could take their time on some guys and they could pick some guys into developmental roles. Like you said, start them off on special teams. You don't need to throw all these guys in the fire right away because they have an established roster that just won the Super Bowl, especially with a bunch of young players. And I think that was really exciting about Veach's plan is that, you know, they can pepper in talent here now. And if one of these picks, you know, they can reach on a guy or reach by like standard definition of reach. And if he doesn't work out, it doesn't hamstring the team because they're so well established. But yet if it does, it's a homer. Yeah, just a great plan, I think, by everybody involved in the front office. Let's move on to the schedule. What's that?
That's where hitting in the draft last year was so important because
huge.
As we all know, when you pay your quarterback, it makes it difficult to pay your superstars elsewhere. You got to add good young talent. And for the Chiefs to, I mean, really hit it out of the park like they did in last year's draft, to have so many guys contribute right away on both sides of the ball, to get Isaiah Pacheco in the 7th round and for him to be the leading rusher in the Super Bowl.
Unbelievable.
It's just nuts. I mean, having Patrick Mahomes is a big part of it, but what Brett did in the draft last year and in previous years, and hopefully in this past draft, is a big reason why the Chiefs are winning right now, too.
Yep. So let's move on to the schedule that was just released on last Thursday. I guess, were you surprised that the Lions were the pick for the opening night? I know everyone kind of tried to handicap the Bills or the Bengals or one of these big AFC showdowns. Even an AFC West team, I think, would have made a lot of sense, but they went with Chiefs Lions. What was your initial reaction to that announcement?
Well, I'm just like a fan with this as well, where I just see all the noise. So everyone says, like you mentioned, is it going to be the Eagles? Is it going to be the Bengals? Maybe the Bills or a divisional matchup? And then when it's the Lions, I guess there was a bit of surprise, but it also makes a lot of sense because the Lions are going to be one of the best teams in the NFC this year. I think they're a team that's really on the rise. I think they kind of caught everyone's attention and in a lot of ways, people's hearts when they beat the Packers last year at the very end. I mean, I was rooting for the Lions. They're a great story. I like Dan Campbell. I like just that whole team and their mindset. So I think they're an easy team to root for and to be interested in. So while maybe it was surprising on the onset because we all expected one of these big rematch games, I actually don't think it's surprising when I've had a chance to think about it because it's really in a lot of ways the Chiefs, who are the established best team in the NFL, trying to be a true legacy team against a team in the Lions who is trying to kind of announce themselves. And I think one of the hardest things to do in sports isn't necessarily to start winning. It's to win when you're expected to win. And that's going to be the tough bit for the Lions this year is people expect them to win now and you have to come out and do it. It's hard. And I think week one season opener, everyone's going to see how ready the Lions are, but it should be a fun matchup. I'm looking forward to it.
Matt, what game are you, I know it's hard to pick, but what game are you most excited for?
Most excited for? So I'm looking at the schedule right now. You know, I'm excited for a lot of them, but I think getting Mahomes versus Rodgers finally is going to be a lot of fun in week four.
If we do get Mahomes versus Rodgers, now we thought we were getting
let's
it
not,
a couple times.
Let's not count our chickens before they're hatched.
Knock on wood. If it happens, I think I'm looking forward to that one the most, particularly just early in the season, because I think the Chiefs can really set the tone early on in the year, get off to a great start, and that's obviously going to be a huge matchup. And I'm just curious to see what the Jets look like this year, particularly early.
Yeah,
it's just tough when you add so many 100%. New people.
Yep. Yeah, they're a really interesting study with like adding the veteran to a team that has everything but the quarterback. And
we saw the Broncos try it last year, and you know
they tried.
They tried it.
That. Let's
winning
talk.
Is hard.
What's that? Yeah,
winning is hard.
Absolutely, it's the hardest thing to do in professional sports, especially at the NFL level. It's almost impossible. Let's talk real quick about the Germany game. There were strong rumors for a while that it was originally going to be Chicago, maybe. Again, this is just noise that people pick up on social media, stuff like that. Apparently, according to the scuttlebutt, the Chiefs protected the Bears as the game to stay in Arrowhead. So then it became the Dolphins. Now Tyreek doesn't get a homecoming. Do you have any sense about the politics of what happened there? Or was that just kind of the schedule god saying, like, okay, we're going to do Chiefs Miami in Germany?
I'll be honest. I don't know the behind workings of all of that. What I will say is this is a cautionary tale when you hear reporting or you hear rumors.
Yep.
Part of my job is I'm not allowed to talk or comment on anything until it's official. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes that might be a bummer because let's say the Alex Smith trade several years ago is a good example. I couldn't comment on that until like a month after it actually happened because it wasn't official yet. The trade, quote unquote, took place in February, right? Or was agreed to reportedly in February.
Sure, right.
It didn't happen until March 15th or whatever, technically. So I could not acknowledge it until then. But where it is a blessing is there's so much false information out there. And sometimes I think people just say things and then groupthink kicks in and then everyone says, well, this is what's going to happen. And then official stuff comes out and people are like, but wait, I thought it was this. It's like, well, no, that was never real, you know? So I don't know what happened with the game or how it ended up being the Dolphins, but it is a cautionary tale to not always believe the rumors and things that are out there until it's actually official. But it should be a great matchup in Germany. I'm actually going to Germany here in about a week on an advanced kind of fan cultivation trip. So
that's awesome.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Are you going to be then obviously posting content with like while you're over there with the German fans? Is that kind of how that works?
That's the idea. Yeah. So we're going to do a few different things while we're over there. But the main thing is there's a like a rooftop restaurant bar kind of place in downtown Frankfurt that we're going to host like a big event for Chiefs fans, new Chiefs fans in Germany. Like if they're interested, Dante Hall will be there, which will be cool. And I'm just going to host a Q&A with Dante. And if these new fans want to ask any questions, they can. But we're kind of it's exciting because we're kind of introducing the game of football to all of these Germans. And we have the luxury of being the best team in the league. And for them, they're like,
it's an easy sell.
He's great. Yeah, it's like, right. Come aboard. So it's a pretty exciting time just to be sharing the game with so many people around the world.
Well, that's going to be a blast. Good luck to you there. That'll be a heck of a trip. You know, just kind of looking at the number of games on the Chiefs schedule where they'll be the only game on, not only do they have the 6 primetime games, but they also have the Christmas game. They also have New Year's Eve, just a lot of showcase events for the Chiefs from the NFL. Pretty cool to be the face of the league, isn't it? I mean, as far as the franchise goes, like obviously they've got Patrick and they've got all the superstars, but just Chiefs football is, I mean, if you talk about a neutral fan that maybe is interested in the NFL but doesn't have a team, like what team are they going to see more than the Chiefs this year? It's a lot of fun.
It's crazy. It's 8 times this year because you include the Germany game too, where the Chiefs will be the only game on TV. If you want to watch football, you're watching the Chiefs half of the year.
Yeah.
And 7 of the Chiefs games outside of those are at 3:25. So they're the afternoon showcase game. A bunch of those will be nationally televised. Mm-hmm. The only standard Sunday noon game the Chiefs have is week 2 against the Jags. And even that's a pretty good matchup, right? It's a rematch of the divisional round.
Monster matchup. Yeah.
So, I mean, just what a time to be a Chiefs fan. That's just kind of what this says, because like you guys, I grew up rooting for the Chiefs my whole life and almost all their games are at noon. Maybe we get a Sunday night football game.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sure.
You know, and that was great. That was fine. That was just what I accepted life was like. And now to be the team and for all of us to be old enough to appreciate it and to really immerse ourselves in it and to remember it. I mean, it's just incredible. So that's what I say to Chiefs fans all the time is just try to enjoy this, enjoy every moment of it, because this is what teams dream of.
Yeah.
This
it's not
every
normal.
Single team wants, and the Chiefs have it and are going to have it hopefully for a long time.
They are. Speaking of growing up as a Chiefs fan, I mean, obviously, I've listened to the greatest of all time play-by-play guy, Mitch Holtis, call Chiefs games since his first season in 94. You obviously do as much work with Mitch as anybody around. Can you just kind of talk about the energy that he brings to the job, how much fun it is to go to work with a guy that's watched every Chiefs snap for 3 decades and is as passionate about the team as he is?
It's a joy, man. It's just a joy. You really hope when you meet your heroes that it was good that you met them. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot of people you might meet a movie star or something. And it's like, man, like that kind of ruined it. Mitch is even better than you could imagine. He is just the best guy I've ever met. And he cares about people. He's wholesome. He's genuine. The guy that you see on TV is the guy that you get. He truly cares, which is what really stands out about him. And I can't believe I get to hang out with him as much as I do. I remember when, so I've been a Chiefs fan forever. I remember the 2003 season. I remember those games, but the first season I really followed closely was the 2005 season. I don't know why. I just remember that season. That's the first one I followed every single game. And I remember hearing Mitch's voice in the car with my mom calling a touchdown against the Jets in week one of that season.
Love it.
To think that I'm like with this guy all the time now, like I truly have to pinch myself. Like we share a suite at training camp.
Yeah.
Like it's a dorm, but we each have like our own little bedroom, but we share like a common area. So we share a shower.
Yeah. Like right. I your buds.
So much, yeah. Like I spent so much time with him. Today, actually, I was cutting together some like off season historical highlights just for social to use over the next several months, stuff from the last 20 years. And
right.
Could have fun with it. Like I found like Priest Holmes' 26th rushing touchdown back in 03 that broke the record.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Eddie Kinnison, his touchdown catch
Green Bay.
In 03. Yeah. Oh, stuff like that. Like, fun stuff, you know, that people that have been fans forever would appreciate. And he walked by and I was like, come on in here and watch the stuff with me. Cause I would sync up his calls with it. And
that's great.
Amazing.
I would pause it before I'd play it. He would just see like the formation and like maybe the scoreboard at the top. Right. And he'd be like Packers 5-2003 Eddie Kinnison 51 yards. And I was amazing. Like, you're right. And I'd play it. And then
amazing.
It was just incredible. So,
do you ever have him just say Dante Hall's going to do it again to you? Just like, just recreate a call. I mean, he's the best.
And kind of picking his brain and learning about how he does it is so cool because I also have the opportunity to spot for him on the road in the booth. So, what that means for those listening that don't know is when Mitch is calling the game, he has kind of a little army of people in the booth with him, kind of helping with small little things. So he's one guy who's the stats guy who'll hold up a note card that says 4 for 4 yards, for example, mm-hmm. It's a 4 yard gain. What I do for him on the road, and mainly just because it's fun and he lets me do it, is I have a whole plastic depth chart with all the numbers and names of the Chiefs players and the opponent. And let's say, Derek Johnson made a tackle, I would point to 56 on the board. So he would be like, he's watching it with his own eyes, but I can watch it with binoculars and I can totally confirm what he's seeing. So I get to see him, like his brain working when he's calling these great plays in the moment. And one of the clips that I showed him this morning was Eric Berry's pick 2 against the Falcons. Back in 2016.
Classic.
Yeah.
One of the things he says on it is it's the first pick 2 in the history of the Chiefs. And he says it so naturally, it's fluid.
Yeah.
And I was,
I mean, like, it's before he even gets to the end zone, I think.
Yeah.
That, yeah, if I remember the call correctly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, unbelievable.
How'd you know that? Like, how are you right? Ready? Like,
right.
There's no doubt in your mind, like a little bit. Like, what if this is wrong?
Yeah.
And he was saying, he was explaining that earlier in that particular game, DJ almost had an interception on a 2-point conversion. And he was like, I logged that away and realized this would be the first one ever. Then it happened. It actually happened later in that game. And it's
crazy.
So it's like an orchestra. So I don't know, man, it's just being able to be around him and see how he works. I mean, he's just the best ever to do it, I think. And in addition to that, he's such a great dude. He's like my best friend, you know, to say that Matt, I can't believe it. So
I still remember, I think this would have been the first, I think it was in 2018. You might know better than me, but I remember when he called his 200th game and they asked him before the game, they did the little ceremony. And obviously he came across just as incredibly humble. And, but I remember him saying something that stuck with me because I think this was Mahomes' first year as the starter. You know, he said, people always ask me like, what's your greatest call? And he said, it hasn't happened yet, but it's coming. Yeah. And for him to be able to call then now 3 Super Bowls after, you know, going 30 years of calling Chiefs games without a playoff win. I guess 20 years without a playoff win that he was calling Chiefs games. I mean, it just is, I don't know him personally. And I don't get to work with him, but it made me happy for him. Like to think about, and you know, as soon as like I got to hear the radio call of Super Bowl 54, you know, I thought back to that, what he had said a year before that or a year and a half before that. And it was like, I mean, he knew what was coming. He's been preparing for his whole life for this. And it just is cool for us as Chiefs fans to get to see him, you know, still in his prime as a broadcaster, get to call these moments for us. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so happy for him. And as happy as I am for myself that I started working for the Chiefs in 2016, I was an intern. 2017, I was full time. Basically, my whole Chiefs career, even though I was watching them before this, my whole Chiefs career, all we've done is go to the AFC title game. That's awesome. But for him to deal with a lot of years where the Chiefs are maybe going to make it to the first round and lose, and that, you know, was kind of their ceiling for so long, where the 2003 season was the season we all hung our hats on, you know,
yep.
For him to now have this run of success, I'm just so happy for him, because at the end of the day, he's just like us. He's a fan. He grew up in central Kansas on a small town, on a farm.
McPherson, right?
Well, I think nearby, it is. Smith Center. His wife's Smith from there. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But rooting for the Chiefs. And when you hear Mitch screaming a touchdown call, he's doing it, yeah, because he's the announcer, but also because he is a Chiefs fan and he's super fired up that the Chiefs just scored. And I think that's so authentic and so real, because like I mentioned at the top of the show, for people that do this kind of thing, like, I never thought I'd work for the Chiefs. I thought I was going to work for the Seattle Mariners or, sure, you know, the New York Giants. Like, just, I just wanted to work in sports and I watched the Chiefs in my own time. He's the same way. He fully accepted, I'm going to go be the voice of some other team. And really, for both of us to end up on our childhood team, that's why in all of our coverage, like, it's real from us. We care, because we're just fans in the end. And Mitch is the ultimate fan. So I'm so happy for him that he gets to experience all of this.
And for us, it's infectious. It's so genuine from that perspective that when we listen to it, I mean, we feel like Mitch is right there in the living room. And we feel like when you guys are doing your coverage of the games, that it's not just like, here's what happened to the Chiefs. It's like very, you know, it's like you're right there with us. And it's just the coverage of the team has been phenomenal my whole life, but especially these last, you know, this last stretch. So definitely appreciate you and the whole team for that stuff.
Thanks, man.
I want to get you out of here with the most in-demand topic when talking about the Chiefs, of course, as always, Patrick Mahomes. You've got as good of a vantage point as anyone I've ever talked to for the type of impact he makes as a player, a leader, a person, stuff you were saying earlier just about who he is. There's a legitimate argument probably to be made that he could go down as the most impactful or significant athlete of our lifetimes when it's all said and done, based on where we think he's going. You're the team reporter that gets front row seats during his prime, during the prime of maybe the prime athlete of our lives. Do you ever just kind of like marvel at how for the rest of your life, if you're in a room full of people, you can just dazzle them with firsthand accounts of maybe the greatest athlete of all time?
On one end, I try not to get caught up in that. But on the other, yeah, it is pretty amazing. And I try not to lose that perspective, because like we've talked about throughout this show, he is not normal. And guys like him do not come along often, and we have to enjoy every second of it. I think he's going to go down as the most impactful athlete in Kansas City history for sure. I think he already is.
Yes.
And he very well could go down as the most impactful athlete in the history of North American sports. I think Michael Jordan is that guy right now. And right. I think Patrick legitimately has a shot at being a Michael Jordan level person for the rest of time. And the fact that he's our quarterback, he's our guy, and he's so uniquely himself. It would be very easy for Patrick to be very wrapped up in his success and all of that. He's not. He's one of the most humble people I've ever been around, and he has no reason to be humble. I mean, he's accomplished everything. He's the best. And I think that's why he's so likable and why he's so great, is because as good as he is, he is never satisfied with it, and he is not interested in telling people how good he is. I think it's awesome he introduces himself to people. Hi, I'm Patrick. I know who you are. You know, like, he does that. I think it's genuine from him. In every interaction I've ever had with him, he's just been the best, and he's never changed. He's been the exact same guy that I was covering when he was a rookie in 17, not playing, just going to community events. He's been the exact same dude, even though he's won multiple Super Bowls and multiple MVPs. And that says everything you need to know about him and how fortunate we are that he's our quarterback, and also how he invests in the city. I mean, him and Brittany bringing the current to Kansas City, him investing in sporting, investing in the Royals. Just, he's so invested in Kansas City and all the stuff he does with his foundation in the community too. Like, he wants to make Kansas City a great place to be for everybody. And that's just, how lucky are we once again that he's just this great player. He's a great dude and he cares about the city. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more as a sports fan.
It was very easy for Austin and I to call our show It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom, because it absolutely is. Matt, we super appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the perspective and the fun stories. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again sometime soon.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me.